SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
XM 201 Sports Zone 964 and at our website too, stevebick.com. And a little bit of an early dawn somehow. I don't know why it's the sky off to the east looking a little brighter, and hopefully prospects here are brighter going into the weekend. And yesterday racing resumed, and we'll touch on that, but because things I think could have been problematic, let's say that. And the other big day, of course, came at Keeneland. And the Keeneland season kicks off the first two-year-old race of the year. And right away, the Keeneland the Keeneland big balloons, the big numbers, they came rolling. And how about Cirillo Gorostiola sending out Mean Sophia, and a romping 10-length win for the Smarty Jones filly. She pays $29.40, and then you had a 30-to-1 shot second, a 40-to-1 shot third, 16-to-1 shot fourth. Absolutely crazy, crazy numbers. The 10-cent super paid $10,337. Incredible. And you had a $250 exacta. A $561.50 try, crazy mutuals to start the Keeneland season. And then the normalcy, you know, started to work its way in, including, how about the return of Bulletin in the stake? And Bulletin comes back, couldn't have, you know, just obviously was going to be the horse to beat, goes off at even money, and wins very much with authority. The City Zip Colt for the Justified team, basically, the Windstar and China Horse Club and SF Racing Bulletin, and that set off the Ascot bells. From what I can see, I can also see in front of me Rick Hammerly, and say good morning, Hammer.
Good morning, Steve. Huh? I know there was some odds out there if I'd show up for the third day.
Who said that?
I know, it's just funny.
No.
But the guys come and see me coming through the gate. They're kind of puzzled. What are you doing here?
Is Hammer back?
Yeah, are you back? You know, but, I said no. But doing my duty out here, probably helping to promote racing.
Well,
and I think that's all we can do right now.
Yeah, and there's plenty. Listen, there's plenty to promote, and plenty of things to look forward to today. Another stake at Keeneland, the Transylvania, and they got a, some ways even a better slate today as they swing into action, and it's the College Scholarship Day. We'll remind you one more time, and so nice of the Run Happy team, Jim McInvale, $10,000 scholarships, two of them, one of them dedicated to a member, a son or daughter of the industry, and then won a general scholarship, and then the other $10,000 scholarships, including one specifically dedicated to son or daughter from the industry. So it'll be a festive day. It always is. This is always a big deal at Keeneland. And then into the weekend, bluegrass and everything that comes with it, the Ashland and the Madison, three highlights, and also course part of the 50 cent cross country pick five. I've been trying to negotiate that myself. I also, speaking of putting together multi-race tickets, that aqueduct sequence today, and it includes the Distaff handicap that we talked about with Andy. Really good race and a great prequel to the Wood Carter Day at Aqueduct. We'll talk to Dave Grenig in hour three. We're going to start coverage this morning as we go around and do capping. We'll talk to Marty McGee first, then Jay Privman. Nick Tamaro will swing in. We've got a Hong Kong conversation to catch up with Dick Powell and Mike Willman. Mike Willman coming by?
He might. He's running around. He's running around. We'll see if we can get him here.
But, all right. Mike Willman, of course, and Quigley. Got to catch up with Quigley in hour three, and maybe a surprise visit or two.
Well, we're kind of back to the old days where we used to have the office door open, and whoever happened to walk by, we would pull them in. So we'll do the same thing today as we've done the last couple of days. We had Mark Glatt here, I think, and
I talked to Mark
and Dan, and once again, as we've proven over the years, time and time again, when you're a guest on the show, good things happen. I think Mark won one yesterday, and Jerry Hollendorfer and Dan, they got beat a dirty nose in the turf race yesterday. So it's always good when you show up on Steve Bick Show.
Well, one thing, you mentioned Hollendorfer, and yesterday in the second race, he had a horse pull up, Giovanni Franco, the outside horse, and this is what I was sort of hinting at. And it wasn't a question of the horse necessarily being off, but something was bothering and somebody suggested that might have been tying up a little bit, and Franco just out of the gate, just a couple of strides, mincy, and he wisely pulled up. But this is a topic that has to be driven home and reiterated, going back to the New York experience, where the culture, you have to communicate to the riders, and the trainers also need to understand you can't, if a rider doesn't like the way a horse is feeling for whatever reason, you go to the vets at the behind the gate and you say, I don't like the way the horse is warming up. Something's amiss. And no trainer can hold anything against anybody doing that. It's imperative that everybody understand that. And it took probably 4 to 6 months in New York before everybody and the horse players too, who get frustrated, everybody accepted that philosophy, and it's imperative. And in New York now, it's not, nobody shrugs up, nobody, the trainer and owner might say, damn it, all right, but you don't hold it against the jock, and you just regroup, you jog for the vets to show that the horse is fine, and you re-enter whatever 2-3 weeks later. It's that has to be the watchword here and everywhere. It's that simple.
I think you're right, and I don't think that's been a problem here. We've started that culture years and years and years ago. That if there was any question, the horse was allowed out, and it was just understood. And of course, there's always that little tension between the rider and the owners and the trainer on the track. Oh, there was always, I don't want to put him on the horse because he gets a lot of horses scratched. But that was years ago. The mode has changed around here way before the situation this year, that it was fine to do that. And we have very good there's a very good vet at the gate here. And has no problem, kind of checking horses out, give the nod, let's take a look, watch me jog as I go up and down before, in front of the gate a little bit. So maybe this reinforced it, but there's never was a problem here doing that. The stewards never question. It's not, they never try and force them to, put them in there. They let them out, and I think it's been a good thing, but it's being reinforced again now. And it needs to be reinforced nationally, I think, maybe is your point.
No doubt, and it didn't come easily, because the habits and practices. But what John Sheriff said, and I'll slip this in here too. I spent after the show. John sat here with me for 2 hours, and basically from 9 to 11 or 9:30 to 11:30, and we had the greatest talk. And he like several, like any number of the horsemen here, they're not eager, Rick, you can understand, to voice every element of their reaction and concerns. So it was more a philosophical conversation with John, and you're not going to find somebody with more experience or a better understanding or a wider panorama of the history, and really on both coasts. We think of sheriffs as East Coast, but West Coast, but he spent plenty of time East, and he said some fascinating things to me.
He has an interesting perspective on a lot of things. He's very calm in the way he talks. And let's forget, you know, we think of him as a trainer of Zenyatta. He was around 30 years before Zenyatta came along and had you know, plenty of horses going into that. And he's got a great perspective because, like I said, he doesn't get too upset. He's pretty level-headed, and he's got a ton of stories. And, you know, when you see John get upset, there's a problem. I only one time that I saw him get upset was, I think Zenyatta was running in the Santa Margarita, and we put the weights out. Didn't really think about it. Put the weights out. And obviously, she's going to be top weight, and you know, spent you know hours and days figuring out what to put on her. I forget what we put on her, 126 or something. And I happened to be walking through the grandstand, some you know, innocent Thursday. And somebody said, well, John's looking for you. I think he's in your office. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. And I went in and sat down, and he was as angry as he could be. Because, you know, we thought we put too much weight on her, and, you know, she was coming back. I forget the circumstances. And it's like, man, I don't know what to say. You know, you got the best, not the best filly in the country, but the best, you know, the best running horse now in the country. And anyway, so then that stuff, but that's the most angry I've gotten. He wasn't even that angry. He was just kind of trying to understand. So you walk them through, and there's no way to explain weights to someone. It's a judgmental thing that at that time, at that moment, when you and your team is going through it, at that moment, that's what you think the right weight is, and you know, you move on. But I'll tell you what, I didn't sleep well the night before the race. And I, you know, it was one of those close ones, you know, with her. The one thing about her was, because of her style, there was a moment in every single one of her races where you that she was going to get beat.
There's no doubt about that.
Wherever it might have been, on the backside, at the top of the lane, at the eighth pole, even inside the 16th pole in a couple of races. And I was quietly rooting for her to get up for sure on that, because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to see my name in a press the next day about it. They put too much weight on her, but she won. But he understood what we had to do. And, you know, one thing about putting weights on, which is, it's not only a lost art, it's pretty much non-existent. The Sanity Handicap, one of the very few races left, maybe the only grade one race left. And that's just because of the name, because how do you change the name? So it's got to be a handicap. But, you know, putting weights on a horse is an art, and we spend time with it. But anyway, it used to get people upset.
Well, I just was poking around, and there it is. She was coming back after the Breeders' Cup Classic, the win, and this would have been in March of the next year. And you packed 127 on it.
127. There you go.
But she won by a length and a quarter over Dance to My Tune and Floating Heart.
Right.
The one is, you know, it's funny. You know whose name came up yesterday, because I got a very nice email from somebody who is one of those people around the industry that can be a lightning rod, and you know, Jerry Jim Gotchian, not as vocal or as out in front now as he was in his heyday when he was you know, trying to get, particularly in this state, the racing authorities to address some things.
He had a unique way of getting attention.
But I was always quite happy to have him on, because like a lot of firebrands, a lot of what he was pointing out had real merit. But it was, if you remember, who was it, Satan's Quick Chick of Jerry's, that there were a couple of his runners at the time that gave Zenyatta There was the one
at Del Mar, I think it was,
where she absolutely looked beat, and in the last lunge, in the last, and I'm almost positive that was either Satan's Quick Chick or one of Jammer's good horses, and he was on my mind because he's observing this, and he's still breeding. You'll see. He might have three or four or five horses in training these days with Eric Reed, who's been handling his horses for a long time. But he's doing some breeding, and he's had a couple of big ticket successes with his offspring.
I still converse with Jerry time and again, and I think back, and the I'll tell a quick story that the Jamgotchian era actually began. I was part in the center of it at Del Mar. Very simple situation where I think Mark was a trainer at the time, Mark Latt, and he put a horse in for a Friday, something like that, and wanted to re-enter the horse for Saturday. And basically, the deal was, okay, if the race goes on Saturday, we'll let you out on Friday, but if it doesn't, you got to stay in the Friday race. Something as simple as that. Well, the second race didn't go, and it was like, okay, you got to stay in here. And he wanted to come out and go into a stake, I think, up north, and he wasn't let out at the time. The horse was made to run, and he got a little bit upset. But he was kind of new on the scene, and I remember fax coming through. Please have someone from Del Mar call me. And the fax came in with, maybe font 10. And then another fax came in, and the font was like, 20, and then there was another one. Please have someone call me, and I don't know what happened, but I'm like, who's this guy? And then ended up, they made the horse run, and the rest kind of was history. And Jerry has, done some things with the claiming, and he's had some issues with the CHRB through the years, and some of the points.
Some Earl Scheib work, I think, was involved in
69-95. At Hollywood.
Pick your color.
But we just still talk to Jerry. One of the things about, he was involved with the sport. At that time, he had many more, and he could be get a little angry here and there. But we still talk, and like you said, he's still in the game, and he's had horses with Eric Reed for years and years and years. But there were times when Jerry's name brought shivers down the hall. When Jerry'd be on the phone. I said, no, I'll talk to him. But, those are some of the guys you just have to, reason with. And like I said, he's still in the game, runs most of his horses back east. But I do remember that Zenyatta time. And I remember.
There's more than one. Rinterval was one of them in the Clement Hirsch in 2010. And I know, I'm almost positive, Satan's Quick Chick took her to the limit earlier. Maybe the year before. I'll pull up. I'll pull up Zenyatta's PP.
I'm pretty sure it was at Del Mar. And I could collectively hear the crowd looking at, and then you could see them looking at their program and go, oh my gosh, that's Jerry's horse. And then she came, of course, and nailed it. But
I had the greatest conversation with sheriffs yesterday. I'm going to try to convince him to. Somewhere along the line here, because it'd be far ranging. He, for instance, we were talking about durability and the medication issues going on, and one thing that he reminds people of that about the medication of medicating horses and why it evolved the way it did was the expansion of year round racing. He said when there was the period. Here, after September, like September 15th, there wasn't any big track racing until Santa Anita opened on December 26th. So horses got 3 months off. They got about 100 days. Everybody, so he said that's been a he doesn't believe, for instance, the suggestion that horses just physically aren't made as durable. He thinks there's some other factors that are weighing on that, and including year-round racing.
Well, you think about that, and think about the East Coast when horses got time off, they'd send them to South Carolina,
yeah,
or whatever,
exactly.
Come back. So they're racing period that they could run was only 7-8 months.
Right.
So they were fresh. So in that 7-8 months, they were able to fire.
Exactly.
Whereas now, literally, the horses don't get a break.
Exactly.
They're doing training. They're doing something. They're jogging. They're out there every single day. So
exactly.
They don't have that built-in break where they can freshen up
exactly.
and come back and run more. I think it's a big part of it.
Let's take a break. We'll get the handicapping going. Marty McGee joins us first.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Yeah, we got three tickets to the Brand Band concert. That means Monday night at Pacific Palisades. Are you going to all in if you want to answer?
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right.
I woke up again this morning with the sun in my eyes. When Mike came over with a script surprise. A mafioso story with a twist. A two-one fool, Julie. Here to get your ass out of bed. I said I was waiting on the way. But we did nothing. So we went nothing.
We're back at the races, back at Santa Anita. We'll head back to Kentucky, and Marty McGee is back on the road, back and forth from Louisville to Lexington. Opening day yesterday at Keeneland. They come back today with College Scholarship Day, and then, of course, the big Bluegrass Ashland-Madison card on Saturday. It's also the last round of Kentucky Derby future wagering as well. Mart! Marty, say hello to Hammerly.
What do you say, Hammer?
Hi, Marty. How's it going? Where are you? Boy, every time you're a frequent flyer, too.
He's back in Kentucky.
We were talking about getting Steve a bus to go around the country. We need to get you one, too, or at least a scooter or something.
Yeah, I got back close to 2 weeks ago from Gulfstream. So, yeah, it was a good winter.
Well, and it looks like a good spring on tap. Things got rolling yesterday, Mart. Before we talk about Keeneland, let's quickly cover two stories, a quick review of last round of future wagers.
Well, you know, I've done this every year since 99, written about every pool for the DRF, and it, there's a pattern that's developed. You have the field real strong in pool one, and then pool two, it's like 6-5 in pool one, 5-2 in pool two, 4-1 in pool three, and now it's, you know, now we're pretty much down to the nitty gritty. So we got 23 of them in there. Clearly these final rounds of preps, Steve, will determine the closing odds. If game winner runs big, he'll most assuredly be the favorite, you would think. I think we have 9 of the 23 individually listed in action this weekend, so it'll be in flux. You know, I've mentioned this numerous times with you. I don't know why anybody would bet on any of these horses who are involved in these preps before they actually run on Saturday, because the odds don't lock in until the pool closes at 6 Eastern on Sunday.
Now, Marty, real quick, I always wondered, Why wouldn't they close the polls on Saturday morning so you could get some advance odds before they ran, or at least try it? And because, you know, let's say like some 25-1 shot, and he wins. Well, guess what? He's 4-1 now, and you didn't get the value. I was just curious about that.
Well, two reasons probably, Hammer. One is you want the people are out at the tracks on Saturday and Sunday mostly. That's their opening for people to bet. I mean, that's when they're going to get the most handle. And secondly, there's always going to be a futures aspect to it anyway. I mean, for instance, this weekend, even after this, you have the Arkansas Derby horses and the other horses who have already run, and you're speculating on them too. So, you know, I think the main reason, though, is just the weekend betting.
I get it. I mean, always went through my head as it takes out the intrigue of picking out a horse before the event.
I remember riding in 1999, the first year they had this, and there was a lot of publicity about it, and we talked to a lot of people. Roxy Roxborough, your man, Vic, said, Perry Mutuals and futures mix like oil and water. So it's still kind of the thing they're trying there is no perfect way to do this, really.
That's why they have Las Vegas.
Yeah.
A quick look here. Game winner, Heichel, Instagrand, Outshine, Roadster, Signalman, Tacitus, Vekoma, and Win-Win-Win. They are all running, of course, on Saturday. The other horses that are going to run next weekend, another Twist of Fate, possibly, Galilean next week, Improbable, Long Range Toddy, Omaha Beach. They are going to run one more time. And then the rest are horses that are basically, sitting with points to participate in Derby. And, you got to speculate late Sunday what price, especially for the ones that are going to run next week, that could then, elevate. I mean, Galilean, for instance, is 30-1. He might be around 30-1, 40-1 on Sunday. He goes to Arkansas, runs big, and you got yourself a horse at three times the price he'll be on Derby Day. That's your concept. Marty, a quick story that broke this morning, and Kentucky legislator Adam Koenig sent me the link. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen it. And Turfway, the other shoe, finally dropped on this sale by Jack Entertainment, the casino in Cincinnati, and Turfway being bought by Hard Rock International.
Yeah, Matt Haggerty's working on that for us this morning, Steve. And I was on the Pollock Report that said that the sale price was, or maybe Turfway put this out themselves, the sale price was $780 million, which is a reflection of two things. One, their access now to the casino type of gaming that is prevalent here now at all the other tracks, Churchill and Keeneland included. And then also the real estate value there in northern Kentucky is really valuable. So I think it's a function of those two things. And it's gone from one casino to another. I don't know if fans will much notice, as we go forward from here, but it went from Jack to Hard Rock, and I can't really tell you what that means.
Well, the one thing that it brings it to focus is the way in which Jack and Chip Bock had basically been treading water on the renovation of Turfway and the building of their historic racing machinery parlor. And you know, it was being on hold. It was coming. And it's pretty obvious that they knew they were going to sell. And why would they spend that money to put that in? And so we'll have to watch immediately to see if Hard Rock, how quickly they, take up the slack and renovate Turfway. But, this is for winter racing in the Kentucky circuit. This feels like a positive. Let's talk about, spring racing on the Kentucky circuit. Keeneland yesterday. Bulletin starts off the season very nicely, and I tell you, Todd Pletcher is hitting it all cylinders right about now.
He's doing real good. You know, a couple months ago, we thought he was going to be empty-handed for the Derby. He's got two or three now. He's got Intrepid Hearts and an allowance. I don't guess he'll get any points, but, his three-year-olds are coming along a little bit later than they had in previous years. And then Bulletin was just awesome yesterday. I took a shot and tried to beat him with a few others, and, I was second, third, and fourth behind him, but he just took it to him right away and won the inaugural running of the Palisades the same way he did the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint last fall at Churchill Downs. So they're talking about maybe running him once more at either Churchill or Belmont. I don't know what race that would be, but then going forward from there on the June 21st, I believe it is, the Grade 1 Commonwealth Cup over at Royal Ascot. So Elliot Walden with Twin Star, what are the managing partners that owns the colt, came out and said that here yesterday at Keeneland.
Excellent. And, of course, you had the two-year-old season get started yesterday, Marty, and the big balloons, as Harvey would say, Mean Sophia kicks off some of the craziest mutuals you'll ever see.
Yeah, 10,000 and change for the opening Dime Super. That the next one, by the way, paid $2.86 for the next but, of course, I was all over that one. But, it was hard to come up with a 2-1-3-10 or 2-3-1-10 yesterday in the 12-horse opener. You know, there would have been probably a 2-5 favorite in there with Wesley Ward, both of his fillies. Neither of them made it off the AEs. And it's kind of funny. Wesley scratched. He had six horses on the program yesterday. Three of them were on the AEs, and then three of them were in the stake, and he ended up scratching five out of six. The only one he had left was Abyssinian, who ran third in the Palisades. But, Hammer, you know all about this. A guy gets real excited about races going for him, and then he's got six in, and only one of them runs.
Yeah, we've seen that before, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Mark, before we talk about the big card Saturday, some thoughts about the Transylvania. What direction did you go?
By the way, we are on the turf here. We had about a quarter inch of rain overnight. It's been a light rain all morning. The main track has been sealed. The turf, I would imagine, they'll call it good to yielding. It wasn't, obviously it wasn't that much. It might have even needed some rain.
What about Saturday? Speaking of weather, what?
Saturday, we're looking good. Sunday, not so much. They've got thunder showers in the forecast for Sunday, but we should be good to go tomorrow. High of about 75. This place will be thronged with probably close to 40,000 people. There are no scratches today. I do have the scratches up already on DRF Live for today. The main track, probably, I would guess, we're not going to have any more rain today. It'll probably be good to fast by the first race at 105 Eastern. Field of 11 is intact for the Transy. War Film, I thought, was awesome in his last race at Fairgrounds. He won here last fall in a other than. A.B. Flatter, I'm very intrigued by him. They're kind of going sideways to the Queen's Plate with him. I read somewhere that he's the early favorite for that race in late June. He's a very intriguing prospect. Josie Carroll told me that she thought about running one of the races down at either Gulfstream or Tampa on the dirt, but he just didn't work the way she wanted on the dirt, so they know that he's really good on the grass today, so he's going to be tough in there. I'm going to go with War Film here, Steve.
Well, and War Film happens to be one of my absolute interests, one of those running interests because of the dam, filmmaker Don Adam, and filmmaker was one of my absolute favorites, the big rangy Dynaformer mare, and she's had a parade of good horses, and this is the latest, and of course came back, made the three-year-old debut in March at Fairgrounds, and is two for two coming into this. So the Declaration of War that was purchased very modestly, $75,000 Keeneland yearling for LNN Racing, and Steve Asmussen training, and Florent Giroux riding. Dunf in here after making some forays on the dirt to try to get Derby points for the Wyckoffs, Three Diamonds, and Maker. Now comes onto the grass. He's a Temple City. Makes a lot of sense in here, returning to getting on the surface that he probably was meant for all along. And I'm just looking for a price. 12-1. I will use a little Dunf at 12-1. Thank you.
And speaking of our man Wesley, he's got
Louder Than Bombs. He's got
On the Way to
Hawaiian Noises and on the way to Neverland.
Yeah. So I'm looking at On the Way to Neverland coming back off the Turfway surface back to the turf, and I'm intrigued by the horse on the rail. The Black Album came first time in the country, basically
30%.
Yeah, threw him to the wolves in the Breeders' Cup. Didn't run terrible. And I like the jock switch, and I like the 10-1, and it's got the first-time LASIK. So a little price involved there, and you can't go wrong looking at a horse on the rail in a big turf race.
Marty, let's dive into the Saturday card, and we'll work our way back from the bluegrass, and give us your thoughts on this crazy field that came together. To pull a famous line from the film The Player, the Michael Tolkien novel, no stars, just talent.
Well, you know, it was just 2 years ago we only had seven in this race. That was the day that IRAP won for Doug O'Neill and pretty much wasn't heard from again. But this is a terrific field. This kind of reminds me of back in the Polytrack days when you had all kinds of turf and dirt horses running, and you had a mishmash of things. But I'm going to go with our man Trombetta, Steve, with Win, Win, Win. I thought he ran very creditably with a semi-tough trip in the Tampa Bay Derby. Mike's really pleased with the way he's trained up towards this. There's Vekoma clearly is the horse to beat. He drew well in the post, too, with Castellano. But I'm going to look for IRAD to get Win, Win, Win in a pretty good spot. There's some other speed in there. I would think that both Vekoma and Win, 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 if you drew it up on the blackboard, they both want to be sitting a real pretty fourth or so going at the 6-furlong pole and going into the back stretch.
What do you think, Hammer?
I spent a lot of time trying to beat Vekoma. You know, and because he just, once he drew the two posts, I mean, that moved him up even more. He's 9-5 on the program. I was very impressed with the race in Florida and the Fountain of Youth, and George Weaver's done a, George knows what to do with a good horse, so I'm not worried about that. I like the plan, and the numbers-wise, he just stands out. And you mentioned there's not a ton of speed in here, but he's not going to be any worse than fourth, I don't think, going into the turn. He'd be able to get some decent position. I got to use him on the majority of the tickets. Now, tickets, we're talking about that cross country pick five. I'm looking at. I'm intrigued with Sir Winston a little bit coming out of that Tampa Bay Derby. You know, he ran fifth, got beat four lengths. At big odds, I'm going to use him in here. Win, win, win. I'm not convinced. We talked about him yesterday. I like the way he's been progressing. He's kind of just moving along. He was moving at the end of the race, which you want to see. But I'm afraid Vekoma. I hate to be the favorite picker, which I'm not really a fond of. But I could see him, you know, just kind of getting the first jump and pulling out, you know, getting a lead in the stretch and say, come and catch me. And I don't know if they can.
Well, and I certainly, Vekoma and Win, Win, Win are the keys to me, but there's a couple of horses that have run some interesting races, and frankly, the way Pletcher's been going, you look at the Gunther-bred Vino Rosso brother, So Alive. I'll give you a weird horse that is sort of sneaking in under the radar, Marty, and that is Dallas Stewart with the outposted Aquadini. And this is a horse that is absolutely moving in the right direction at the right time. He's a Bernardini out of a Spitestown mare, but he's made real progress January, February, March. And these kinds of horses, these progressive horses getting into stakes company for the first time, they've been making their mark all winter.
Yeah, it seems like he'll be one of the three speeds on the outside. They'd have to send him. They're also going to send some like at Hot Brown down on the rail with the one hole. The folks who own him told me yesterday that if he runs fourth, which he'll get 10 points to add to his 20 from the Turfway race, it depends on whether or not they'll run in the Derby. If he runs a real distant fourth, they're saying no. I don't know if I believe him. But if he runs a decent, you know, close-up fourth, they'll definitely run in the Derby. Signal Man, the three horse, he's one of the question marks. His Fountain of Youth just wasn't very good. Kenny says that he needed the race, and you know, the way he likes to stair-step up to bigger races. So he should have no excuses with that inside post and be able to save some ground, which Brian loves to do. A number of interesting horses in here. I know that Dreammaker, Cassie, is the next day after the Tampa Bay Derby, said we're putting blinkers on him. As far as Sir Winston, he said that Le Perroux came off of him and said this horse can really run. After he got in the clear, he really came flying in that race. So a lot of intrigue in this 95th running of the Bluegrass Stakes here tomorrow at Keeneland.
Marty, I don't see a blinker on notation for Dreammaker.
You know what? He told me that's what they were going to do. I haven't talked to him about that.
I'll text them. I'll text them because it's not showing in the program unless it's a late change. And that happens. But I'll tell you one thing. Take a look at that workout last week. A gate work, best of 48 bullet, a 46 flat. So you're forewarned. The Dreammaker is one of these horses that is alternating performances. He's reacted very badly to his big efforts. That's just a fact. And he may just be one of those horses. I don't know if coming back on 4 weeks makes sense in terms of him getting back to a good race. And John Nichols tells us that he did not have blinkers on for the work, Mart. So I'm going to guess that Cassie is laying off the blinkers with Dreammaker.
After you work that out of the gate, you probably want to keep things as they
are. He told me that. I was on Alligator Alley. He was telling me that when I was down.
All right, let's work our way backwards. And you've got the Ashland and the three-year-old fillies. And, of course, did I see the feedback? Is feedback cross-entered?
She is cross-entered in the Beaumont. Chad is allegedly going to make up his mind today which race he's going in, but I think that the fact that he went ahead and cross-entered her, and she did draw the favorable open-air outside box number 8 in the Beaumont for Sunday. So I would think, if I had to bet, I'd say he's going to scratch from the Ashland, which leaves you basically Restless Rider and Jaywalk, their rematch from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Obviously, it's a huge race for both of them. Then the fantasy mild upset winner, Chocolate Kisses for Cassie, and then Neil Pessin with a little intrigue there with Bell of the One. So it's a pretty good race, even without feedback.
And I thought the same thing about Bell's the One moving back to the dirt off that turf effort, and Chocolate Kisses was terrific in the Honey Bee, absolutely. And you're not, I don't know you're going to get that number again on her, but Jaywalk, the field feels like it's at her disposal.
Hey, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, John was insistent. You know, he blamed himself for the way she ran at Gulfstream. You know, said I thought I had her ready, she wasn't. But he's tightened a lot of the screws on her, and all systems are go now. I was here to watch her work the other day with Tyler Service on hand. So, it's a good race. I know that Kenny he's a little bit regretful that he didn't have one race in Restless Rider before this, but the fact that he ran her in the Goldenrod at the end of the year kind of screwed up his schedule timing-wise. He wanted to give her a break. So, it's just... this is really a good race. Chocolate Kisses, I was a little bit ahead of myself calling her the fantasy winner. I was one race ahead.
That's true. Let's also talk about the Madison, Mart. And, yep, Hammer?
I just want to throw in one interesting thing about Jaywalk as you're going through it. Now, she's run 6 times, and this is her 7th run. It'll be the 7th track that she's been at.
How about that?
You don't see that too often, especially with 3-year-old fillies making that kind of movement around. And I'm glad to see, Marty, that she does have a work over the track. got to know it. And John, you know, he doesn't have to apologize to anybody, you know, coming off that big win. And, I mean, she ran fine for a comeback race, but it sure looks like it sets her up here. But, you know, Kenny McPeak, this is the kind of races that Kenny wins, especially in Kentucky. I mean, she's obviously shown her class running second in the Breeders' Cup, winning the Alcibiades. So you might get a little price on her if you're looking for somebody to upset Jaywalk.
Mart, let's talk about the Madison, which never disappoints.
Yeah, it's a grade one. It's obviously, we'll be looking back at this race when they run the Humana Distaff on Derby Day. We'll get to it here. I've got picked Spice Perfection, the California bred filly. I'm a little Shamrock Rose. Her race here, yes, in the Raven Run was good, as was the Breeders' Cup. She wasn't too good though down at Gulfstream, and she does get the advantageous outside box with IRAD, so really no excuses going forward for her. I'm going to go with Spice Perfection, and there's a lot of speed in here with Amy's Challenge et al., who, by the way, was cross-entered in the one of the races at Oakland this week.
The Carousel.
But she's here now. She's going to run here.
So Mac Robertson is running. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, well, go ahead.
No, I a couple of things. Shamrock Rose, I played her in the Azari, and I thought she was going to get first run and maybe, you know, get the jump on Midnight Bisou in a late, and she did, and she absolutely turned in a quality effort. She got corralled by them. Now she cuts back, Mart, and that's the same exact formula that she employed from the La Lorgnette to the Raven Run. I think she'll be really tough in here. However, I've got that filly that I absolutely have been so taken with, Late Night Powwow, Javier Contreras. She has won, I think, the 10 in a row, and it's been just the most wonderful story, the West Virginia bred, and I am hard-pressed not to root for her to get the grade one win. But it's Shamrock Rose, Late Night, Spice Perfection, and Amy's Challenge. I mean, there's your super.
Yeah, I mean, Javier's been here for a while. I saw him on Sunday morning here at Keeneland, and I know he's pumped up for this race. It is a heck of a story. You're right.
Hammer, got a thought?
Well, we talked about Shamrock Rose yesterday coming back to the 7 furlongs, and obviously that's that goofy distance. Either you like it or you not. Obviously she does, and Marty, you mentioned the outside post. But Spice Perfection, winning the La Brea was a nice win, and coming back and, you know, and running great in the Barbara Fritchie is nice. One horse we mentioned around yesterday was America's Tale.
Sure.
Bernie Flint's horse coming off the inside information there once again. She's shown that she can win at 7 furlongs, you know, maybe a little bit up in the class a little bit. But I think she's going to have something to say, whether she's around at the end or not. I think she's going to be there. And, you know, you mentioned all the other ones, but, of course, we root for from the California horses. But it sure looks like it's the outside horses that are going to be involved. But, I might throw America's Tail in a couple of gimmicks.
There you go. She's done very little wrong for Bernie Flint and Naveed Chowan. Mart, I just heard from Cassie, and he said they tried the blinkers on with Dreammaker for about a few days, and he absolutely hated them. So they gave up on that experiment.
Okay, there you go. That's good.
Shakertown and the Commonwealth, and the early part of the card, and obviously you've got a lot of classy players in the Shakertown, the 5.5 turf sprint. What are you doing here?
This is the start, by the way, of the all-graded stakes pick four, races 7 through 10. I thought that Disco Partner would win if he can get the right trip. He will be fresh, and he might be a little bit closer than he normally is. But if you look at a race like the Breeders' Cup turf sprint, they just got away from him. And, you know, he's gotten older. But he is the class of the race. He's knocked out, almost $1.4 million. If he trips out, he'll win. If not, you can really throw it wide open. I know that Wesley's is really high on Bound for Nowhere, who won this race last year. There's just a ton of speed in here, Steve, with Leighton Revenge and the speedball from Northern California. His name is Bay Music. I mean, they're going to be going you know, there will be some give to the ground tomorrow after this rain, but they've got to go 44 and change, I would think, and it's got to fall apart late, I would think, and that's why I think these two horses, Disco Partner and Bound for Nowhere, are the horses to beat.
Well, I'm going to tell you that if Joe Orsino's Imprimus, if Imprimus runs back to that Silks run, he is absolutely going to take control of the turf sprint division, because that was a scary performance. And this is a horse that I can recall, you know, even when Tim Hills had him, then when he ended up with Joe, with the Breeze Easy people, and I've been so impressed with him all along. I think you got a real handful here, and I did not see a price on Imprimus.
I don't see a price either.
Yeah, 6-1. They've got him 6-1. You know, they ran the first. I was at Tampa, and so were you, for Tampa Bay Derby Day, and I was watching it with Richie Averill, who owns Fanny Price, who's the speedball. And they went the first half in 42. This is not a misprint. 42-4, and came home in 54 and changed. And he got a 10. This horse Imprimus got a 109 buyer. Now you're right. He might take control, but he's going to have to pass these other really, really fast horses early. I mean, at the 3/8 pole, the other two are going to be winging, and he'll probably be right on, you know, with the hot breath behind him. So, but then that's why I'm thinking these 5.5s here at Keeneland are different than some of these 5/8s you'll see at, like, at Del Mar or Gulfstream or used to be at Churchill. And that extra 16th just gets them. So I think that the comfort behinders are favored on the scenario that looks like the way it'll go.
You're talking about Joe Yo's horse, and I was looking at him him too. And looking at you mentioned the soft turf. It might not going to be soft, but it's going to be maybe a little give to it. It performs very well on that, and I think sets up great for Empress. You left out the two Peter Miller horses. Are they still in there?
Yeah, they're both in there. I mean, that's tough to race it, and they add some gas to it too.
Absolutely. Well, you look at Conquest Tsunami, especially, who can really cook on the front end. He just ran last week, 4 or 5 days ago, and to ship him back there. And when Peter does that, he does that with a purpose. But it will be another one that's on the engine. Those 42s, if you look at Conquest Tsunami, involved in some 42s as well. But remember, that's down the hill. So yeah. that race at Tampa, they were flying.
I'm going to give you a horse that could be a knockout type in the pick 5 and the pick 4, Mart. At the very least, he's a horse that I think you want to feather in your exotics. Lon Wiggins sends Anguston out for a 4-year-old debut. This horse, as the year went on last year as a 3-year-old, was getting better and better and better. And he's outposted. In fact, he's been outposted in his last two starts, both in the Franklin Simpson and in the Woodford. He was out in the 10 hole with 11 starters, so he's kind of used to it. Brian Hernandez Jr. aboard, and they may have to maybe take back and come with one run. I guess they'll play the cards as they're dealt, but Anguston is going to be 25-30-1 and can absolutely put the spurs to your triple or super.
I'm with you. Herbeth has it picked, Disco Partner, Bound for Nowhere, and Anguston.
Look at you. Can't beat her niece. Let's talk about the Commonwealth. And the Commonwealth, as always, seems to draw a crazy big field. And here it is, 14 of them going 7/8.
I think the favorites are very vulnerable in here. The problem is I just don't know who to pick against them. Coppertown, we know he's been erratic since he won here last fall here at Keeneland. Recruiting Ready in the 2-hole, he's going to have to send. I really don't know if he can get the 7/8. And then Limousine Liberal, for whatever reason, seems like he's just prone to some tough trips here at Keeneland. So you got a full field of 14. There's all kinds of speed in here with Richie's in the house and like I mentioned, Recruiting Ready on the inside. And you could go down about 12 of these horses, Steve, and make a case for them. I've got it. Let's see the way Hermes has this picked. I've got it picked. Bobby's Wicked One for Al Stahl off those good races.
Wow.
And Fairgrounds and Uncontested and Limousine Liberal.
What about Lukey? What about Warriors Club?
Well, I mean, he did win this race last year and paid a price. And he's got a good post. I know they're high on him. I know that Gary Palmisano and the rest, they really like him. So way, 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 way wide open this race is.
Well, and I'm going to also throw in Todd Fincher coming to town with Runaway Ghost. Is going to turn back from the mile and the 16th win in the Currabot. And I'm a big Todd Fincher fan. I'm going to use a little bit of Runaway Ghost on the turn back. And, you know, the horse that emerged at Saratoga last summer for Ron Paolucci and Anthony Quartarolo, how about Uno Mas Modelo? Good spot for him, and he's got the right style. And this is a wonderfully entertaining race. It's still having fun. Tim Keefe, one of our longtime favorites, Ben Colebrook and K.K. Ball with Limousine Liberal. This is really fun.
Yeah, I'll probably use 8 or 9 to start off my pick 5 here. I'll throw out the three favorites and start from there.
No, and you know, we should mention Coppertown as well. So there you go. Absolutely terrific. A big day today, College Scholarship Day at Keeneland, then Bluegrass, Ashland, Madison, and more. Then the, what we got, the Beaumont, and what's the other stake on Sunday?
We got the Beaumont and the Chad Brown. I mean, the Appalachian Stakes with Chad.
In
there. Yeah.
Mart, I think Jay is patched in. You can say good morning to your DRF colleague, Jay Pribman, on the line.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I'm pumped up. I'm pumped up here, Big. My daughter Molly hadn't been here to Keeneland. So she's gone to Churchill a bunch of times, but she hadn't been here since she's about 8 years old, but she's coming up today with her brother. Brother's running a couple, so yeah, I'm fired up about it. She's even gonna, she graduates in May, but I'm making her sign up for the scholarship thing anyway, because she might be going to grad school or probably law school. So yeah, big day here for the meet.
I love it. Best of luck. Best of luck to your brother too. I see he's got Daddy Made Me Do It in the third maiden group going 7. And what's the other horse he's got?
Got Private Eye in the last, and the only time this horse has ever won was here at Keeneland, so he's in with a shot.
So you're forewarned. Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee, and I just retweeted the early scratches, and make sure you're following Mart for all the action at Keeneland. Mart, we'll talk next week.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks.
See you, Marty.
Marty McGee, everybody. Jay Pribman, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. We just kicked off the Keeneland season. Always a big deal. The contest players converging as well for John Goodman for the Gold Room, and should be a great weekend there. And of course, we got a beautiful morning, much nicer than yesterday here at Santa Anita, Jay. And we'll talk about the card and the Derby watch action in a minute. But let's get the. Sort of the elephant in the room each week that we've been getting together this month, the last 6 weeks, as to where things stand here ahead of the big day.
Well, I mean, I tried to kind of encapsulate the mood in the race preview I wrote for the Saturday Racing Form that, you know, there's obviously this is, you know, you look at that card for tomorrow and you'd, in normal times, and these are unfortunately not, you would just be completely focused and thrilled, understandably, about seeing the top West Coast contenders for the Kentucky Derby, including the current favorite for the race and game winner, along with horses like Roadster and Instagram all running there. You've got the Santa Anita Oaks with Delafina, who might be considered the favorite for the Kentucky Oaks right now, in fact. And then you've got the Santa Anita Handicap with Mackenzie and Giftbox, but there's just, I'm sure as you've seen, Steve, from being out here these last few days, you know, there's just such a, it's just so tense at Santa Anita right now because people are scared, they're fearful of what's going on, and there's still a great deal of uncertainty over what the future holds, right down to having that horse racing board meeting that was called for this coming week to discuss the only agenda item is the potential moving of dates to another venue. So there's just still a lot of uncertainty right now. And, you know, let's face it, we got to get through today to get to tomorrow. And I'm just going to hold my breath. I just wish we could get to tomorrow already.
Understood. You mentioned the mood, and you know, we had Dan Ward yesterday. We had Mark Glatt and Michael McCarthy on Wednesday, and you can just tell Jay that these people have they've got families, they've got homes, they've got their entire livelihood and lives intertwined with the fate of the racetrack, and I get the sense that they just feel like they have no control over anything that's going on.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think the relationship right now between upper management at the track and the horsemen is dreadful. I don't feel like they've had their voices. It seems to me like they don't feel like they've had their voices heard throughout this process at a level, certainly initially, and even now at a level that they find acceptable. And, you know, I think part of the reason is that, you know, if you're on a bus and you tell the bus driver, don't go down that path, and he goes down it anyway, he drives it into a ditch, you want that bus driver taking you home anyway when it's all, you know, when you get out of the ditch. I mean, that's, you know, they're very, very fearful of what's going on.
Well, it's exactly the mood, and you know, and frankly, that you know, that then translates into the riders, and as I've said before and over the years, the horses pick up on the tension as well. I mean, it's a bit of a pall. I suppose if we get to tomorrow and we get the big, we get a nice crowd and people can relax. And of course, that was what was happening last weekend, Jay, when Friday and Saturday went well enough. And then you know, just as quickly, we were, you know, back to, it's like chutes and ladders. You're back at square one.
Yeah, no, very much so. And the thing is, there's no, unfortunately, because of what happened, you know, 6-8 weeks ago when there was the spike in fatalities that was not addressed at an adequate level at the time that it was happening, and still hasn't been, quite honestly. Like I said on your show last week, I thought it was appalling at the horse racing board meeting 8 weeks ago that there were no substantive follow-up questions for Tim Ritvo from the racing board, and that they still had not asked for or required an independent investigation analogous to what went on at Aqueduct when they had their issues years ago, and they had people like Steve Fritz and Jerry Bailey do something. And you know, and then you see the political piling on at that level when somebody like Dianne Feinstein, who, I mean, I've been doing this for over 35 years. I can't ever remember seeing her at the racetrack before, but you know, she wanted to score her political points. That everybody else, people inside and outside the game, want to score their political points on this issue, and it's just, I don't know, it's just a really frustrating situation to see how many unforced errors and missteps there have been along the way, to where we are today. And I, you know, getting back to what you were mentioning about the issue with Armsrunner last week, I mean, if that happens in a climate where there hasn't been a spike in injuries, I think it would have been rightly viewed as an unfortunate, awful accident. But instead, it just becomes number 23. And that's the reality of where we are right now, owing to, you know, there's no, nobody's going to cut Santa Anita a break because of the level that things are at. Previously, I mean, if there'd been, I mean, as I was interviewed the other day on ESPN about this, I said, you know, there's no, you know, you don't want any deaths, but, you know, obviously in any horse performance endeavor, there is some certain amount of risk, some more than others. And if you have an occasional accident and fatality, that's viewed differently than what's gone on at Santa Anita. So when you have an Armsrunner situation happen, when there's been, you know, nearly two dozen preceding him, it's different than, oh God, that's awful that we haven't had one of those in 6 weeks, or, you know, or something like that. So that's You know, and that's why, you know, you watched yesterday's races with one eye closed, and I wasn't up there, but I was watching it on TV, and today as well. Like I said, I just wish we would get to tomorrow.
I want to ask you regarding the San Simeon and then, of course, the subsequent decision to pull races off the hill. And a couple different people that, you know, we talked to talked it as a knee-jerk kind of reaction. It's a predictable knee-jerk reaction, frankly, but nonetheless, what's your thought of you know, trying to mitigate potential for an issue in that circumstance with the crossover from the hill course to the main track to back to the stretch?
I mean, I'd like to see what the if there's any sort of a statistical study done on whether the hill has contributed a greater amount of injuries or fatalities than running races on the main grass oval or the dirt track. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, and that would be to me illuminating, but that's a discussion to have for normal times. I mean, right now, I think what you just said is correct. It's a knee-jerk reaction, but you could almost understand it because
yeah,
that's what people are gonna look at. It's like, oh, look, it happened when he was crossing over, you know, from the grass to the dirt. I mean, if it had happened four strides later when he got to the main oval, I don't know that we'd have this discussion. And I don't know that the dirt contributed to it or not. Nobody knows. I mean, you don't know. But so you have a knee-jerk reaction to something like that. And in these times, I think you sort of understand that that's probably where we're at, unfortunately, until some time hopefully passes without incidents. But it's just Pollyannish almost to think that just nothing's going to happen for the next 3 months. It just doesn't quite work that way, as we regretfully know. So it's just a really really tenuous situation right now.
Let's get to Derby Watch and how last weekend affected your thinking and Mike Watchmaker's. And, of course, Florida Derby and a little bit the Dubai action. The horse is earning some points. And Jason Service is going to have a big chance to put another horse for Gary and Mary West into the Derby gate when Final Jeopardy runs at the Wood. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, your assessment of last weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of either of those races. In the Florida Derby, it was just kind of a merry-go-round race. It's hard to imagine that the winner, who's a very fast horse, and figured to be on or near the lead, made the lead and almost got away with a 49-second half mile. And it was 48.9-something, his opening half mile. So, I mean, they handed him the race. I mean, you're supposed to win when you get a trip like that and you're on the lead. And he and Boat Express, they ran 1-2 the whole way. And horses like Code of Honor and Bourbon War were completely compromised by the race shape. You wouldn't think that something like that would happen in the Kentucky Derby, but it just seemed like it was almost an overreaction to what transpired in the Fountain of Youth. You had when everybody went too fast, or I shouldn't say everybody, the leaders went too fast. So instead, this time everybody took back, and that's the result. I've seen it sometimes like that in the Kentucky Derby over the years. We get like this radioactive pace one year, and we're like, oh, it's going to be another fast pace. And then the next year, the War Emblem walks the dog and is right on the wire. You know, that if you look at the year before War Emblem won, I'm almost sure that was that the Monarcos year. You know, it was just like this insane
yes,
pace.
Yes.
The next year, and then the next year, everybody goes, you know, nice and slow, and it's War Emblem and Proud Citizen 1-2 the whole race.
Exactly, and you know, to some degree, actually, I brought up War Emblem's name earlier in the week about Maximum Security because he came home fast, Jay, and I understand 49.5 and all that, but he really was a bobsled downhill the second half of the race.
Well, I mean, let's face it, it unfolded like a grass race. I mean, they went
That's
slow
true.
Early, and
That's
they came
true.
And they came home fast late. So he better come home fast after
yep.
the pace that he set. So I just don't know what to make of that race. And then, you know, regarding the UAE Derby, I just think it was a very smart move by the connections of the top two finishers, who have clearly shown they're a significant cut below the best Derby prospects in the U.S. right now, to ship over there for a giant purse and make that their, basically their Derby, to take their best shot there. You know, the winner's going to go on to the Kentucky Derby. The runner-up is still kind of on the fence. He's got enough points probably to get in, but I think his connections are realistic about who he is. But then again, you know, somebody might want to partner up at some point, and then you go on. So there's just a lot of moving parts right now. I don't think neither horse will be in my gimmicks, but, you know, I just think that race was a cut below, and I think those horses are a cut below the bet. They're nice horses, and I think they were incredibly smartly managed to go over there and run for $2.5 million.
Hey, Jay.
So, but in terms of the Kentucky Derby, that's a different level of competition.
Hey, Jay, quick question to play the point game here.
Hi, Hammer.
How are you?
Good.
Everything
how are
good?
You?
I thought maybe you'd be live, but you won't be live till tomorrow, right?
No, it's a little early, you know. After, you know, racing form, as you know, our Saturday heavy lifting gets done on Thursday because the Friday paper, you know, paper comes out on Friday. So this,
right.
This is like my eye of the storm day. It's my one day off week.
You take it when you can get it, right?
Well, now, I love spending the morning with you two. Well, let's put it. Well, I just want you to know.
Well, that's great to hear. So since they haven't instituted the airline thing where you can buy points from somebody else, I'm waiting for that to happen. If looking at the points right now, Mucho Gusto is number 20, and with number 20 number-wise in the count, he has 24 points. I don't think he's probably not going to make the trip. And looking at the top 20, I only see 2, 3, maybe 4 of those currently that are in the top 20 that might not run. And then you throw in the horse from Japan who is coming now, so that takes another spot. I'm wondering, and I don't know this, is around 30 points ish gets you in? And this is an interesting year because I don't think we've seen so many horses that we've talked about that literally need to get in that are running the next few days here, including, you know, some like it Hot Brown, Outshine, Signalman, Tax, Instagram, Vacoma, Win, Roadster, you know,
Final
Roadster has a goose egg, Final Jeopardy.
Yep.
So
Vacoma
is going to be the favorite tomorrow, and he's not even in. And so there's going to be some horses left out in the cold here. And so you think 30, I'm looking, it's funny, I was looking at Bourbon War, he's got 31, and I wonder if that 1 point's going to come in handy to get him in. And then, of course, you have, of course, looking at it from the New Mexico vantage point, going to play watch and see what happens, and with the Simple Twist of Fate, if he's going to make it in, and it'll have to run again. So it's an interesting point war I'm looking at this year.
Very much so. So usually, you know, I mean, like 30 is usually a lot. It's like a high ceiling. I mean, it's dropped well below that in times. And a lot of it just depends on how dispersed the results are. If you get repeat winners, then the bottom part actually drops because the same horses are piling up points. If you get a bunch of different results, then a lot more horses are piling up bigger numbers. So this year, for instance, I mean, the 1-2 finishers of the Bluegrass are not in the top 20 right now, and they will be no matter the result of the race, whoever they are, because they're going to earn 100 points for first and 40 for second. And this, with the exception of Tacitus in the Wood, who's got 50 points, everybody else, you know, anybody else running 1-2 is going to have 100 or 40. So, and then you've got the Santa Anita Derby where Instagram or Roadster, if they run 1-2, they're going to have enough points
right?
Yeah, you know, or Nolo Contesto. So I mean, those are the. So I think that there's the potential for that number 20 spot to rise, as you pointed out. there's at least one, if not two, overseas horses that could end up coming in the race. If the foot horse also comes from that European road to the Derby, so there's those spots are carved out. So that makes it that raises the level even more. That's usually offset by horses get dinged up. It happens every year. It'll happen this year. Somebody gets an ill-timed injury that might cost them a couple of months, but it comes at the wrong time, and they end up having to miss the race. I mean, that does happen every year. But right now, it looks like you're going to need more points than you've had to have in the past to get in. And, and to your point about another Twist of Fate, who's at Sunland? I mean, yeah, Blaine Wright, as I talked to him the other day, I mean, he's scoreboard watching because he's very fearful that 30's not going to get him in, which is where he sits right now, and he'd rather not run again. He'd rather go straight to the Kentucky Derby, but you can't win it if you're not in it, and he's going to see where he sits after this weekend, and if he doesn't like where he thinks he's going to be, he's looking at running in the Arkansas Derby next week or the Lexington. The Arkansas Derby has far more points. So that's probably the place to go. But it's because it has more points, it's going to be a much tougher field with horses like Omaha Beach and Galilean and Long Range Toddy.
What is the point structure in the Lexington? Is that a 10-point to the win? 20 to the win?
20, 10, 8, 2.
Okay. So he could theoretically skip Arkansas and run 1-2 in the Lexington. Of course, that pushes the timing.
No, same week.
Same day.
What is
this? Google is your friend.
They moved it up.
Google is your friend.
Yeah. Okay.
It's up a week.
I'm Googleless here. As Steve's pounding away on his information iPad over here, and pulls up everything. But
Did you catch the coffee at least? That. Did you at least do that?
Coffee?
He's not a coffee guy. He's an oatmeal.
For you.
Oh no! I got my own coffee. I'm early. Rosie has it waiting for me. Actually. That's because I'm a friend of Johnny A, Johnny B, Johnny C,
Johnny D,
who made Clocker's Corner what it is. Jay, let's dive in then, and let's start talking about the fields and these three races. Let's go east to west. Start with the Wood.
As mentioned, Tacitus, Tacitus, however you say it. I'm not well versed on religion, so I'll let others tell me how you're supposed to pronounce it. But I like the Tampa Bay Derby win off the layoff. I thought it was a real solid win, and he's certainly the horse to beat. Final Jeopardy's race was very good. This will be his graded stake debut. Very hard to go against Jason Service. And the other horse that I kind of gave a little bit of a look to here was Over Deliver, who I think from a pace standpoint, I mean, he's definitely going a lot farther than he ever has. He's only had two runs at 6 and 7 furlongs, but, he drew the rail in the Pasco and had to show real sharp speed after not really breaking all that well. And it was a distant second to Win. But I think from a pace standpoint, stretching out, he's got like a little bit of a look at a giant number, so I give him a shot. I don't know what to make. Hi, Cal. I'm going to take the position that he's a one-run, one-turn horse. Mike Watchmaker, my colleague, he disagrees with me. He thinks the horse could stretch out. Just from what I've seen of the horse, I just think he's going to be best around one turn, and so owing to his price and what I think his best trip is going to be, I'm gonna be against him. And Hoffa's Union to me just looks like Hidden Squirrel Redux.
Hammer.
Maybe he won't be, but that's how he looks to me.
I'm very intrigued by Tax for some reason.
Probably because it's almost April 15th.
That's true. but I don't do mine until July, so I get the old extension, and my tax gal is...
Well, because usually this time of year, you're buried with...
Exactly.
It's too busy of a time for you to even deal with it.
Believe me, that's the tip of the best tip, one of the tips I ever got was ask for the extension and do it in a nice, calm office where your tax person's not all harried and... You know, hitting the bell, and the secretary comes in and goes 5 minutes, and whatever. But tax intrigues me. With Steve giving me the thumbs up yesterday about the wait, and that this was the plan the whole time. If you look back, mile and eighth, take a little break. Mile and eighth, take a little break. Mile and eighth. He just intrigues me. He's got some numbers that fit in here. So I'm going to use him a little bit, but I had circled. The best thing to do is, you know, you study this stuff at night, and then the morning you're fresh, and you go, oh, I liked him last night, so let's see what we got. But so I was intrigued by him. I was intrigued by Outshine, the horse that ran, kind of hung around in the Tampa Bay Derby there for a little bit.
Right.
I like the pace. I like Johnny V getting back on there. You know, you mentioned Service being hot right now. Of course he is, but Todd is the same way. And those two horses intrigue me. And price-wise, you know, Hoffa's Union, I kind of agree with you. I was a little high on him a little bit more yesterday. The more I dug into it, you know, he might be one of those horses. He ran a real good sheet number first time out, and maybe he'll react to it a little bit. And I just can't overlook the Gotham winner. If something were to fall apart,
he needs pace.
I don't know why. He needs pace.
He's going to need the pace.
He is going to need it. And, you know, sometimes you just don't know in these races that they don't set up exactly like they look like on paper. And maybe he'll get it. And a mile and eighth is a question. And once again, I'm handicapping this race. I'm not handicapping the Kentucky Derby. I don't care if he maybe can't go a mile and a quarter. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about who's going to win this race. And if things line up again, the horse is on. You know, he's doing well. He's progressed every time along. And if he runs, you know, just steps up a little bit, he's there. So that's what I saw last night.
And I'll go in. Yeah.
The reason ahead, I was Jay. Against. Yeah, I was saying the reason I was against. Well, man, I already told you why I was against High Cal. I just think he's the one-run, one-turn horse. Tax. You know, his last two races, the form of those races has not held up. I mean, Maximus Mischief, who won the Remsen, you know, ran one poor race in Florida and then was done. And everybody coming out of the Withers has just been really poor, like not that Brady in our Trust. So it's just the form of those races hasn't held up, and that's why I was against him. And you're right. I mean, I thought Outshine ran a solid race last time. I just thought he had a perfect trip, sitting third behind two dueling leaders, and he still couldn't beat Mott's horse. So that's why I liked others better than him. I mean, he certainly has a chance. I just preferred others.
Well, I agree with you on that. I'm still trying to talked about a little bit yesterday. We have six horses running tomorrow in this race and in the Bluegrass that are coming out of that Tampa Bay Derby,
yeah.
And I'm not sure if that. You mentioned the Withers wasn't that strong and the Remsen wasn't that strong. I'm just trying to get in my head if the Tampa Bay Derby is a go-to race or it's a race that wasn't that strong either, and maybe some of these horses you can toss.
Right.
So I'm in that dilemma.
We'll find out tomorrow.
Yes,
well, and the one horse we should mention and provide an update on. People will recall going into the Gotham, we tried to warn everybody that Not That Brady was dealing with the quarter crack. And at the time, I was surprised under the circumstances that Rudy Rodriguez went ahead and ran him. And to Ray Lou Gutierrez's credit, when it became obvious that, you know, that Not That Brady was not going to compete, he wrapped up on him and just, you know, kind of eased him home. Now, since then, though, he's been able to work normally again. So if you were a Not That Brady fan coming out of his New York bred successes and then into that Withers when he ran so good and just got beat by Tax, don't be afraid to go back to him, because he has gotten back into the swing of things. And that Withers, as bad as it looks on paper, there was a legitimate excuse. So just a note on him. Of course, the Bayshore, we'll talk later with Dave Grenig. The Bayshore has got some terrific sprinters. The three-year-old sprint division is taking itself seriously this year, it seems, this early in the year. Jay, let's move to Keeneland, talk about this big, bulky, wacky field in the Bluegrass.
Well, I think it's kind of chalky with the, I mean, the top two horses, I think both are legit. I thought Vekoma ran a good, solid race in the Fountain of Youth, his first start in a few months, and he's not a very big horse, so I think the extra time for this race as opposed to the Florida Derby will probably suit him. And, you know, I say that in the context of, like Hammer was just referencing, we're talking about tomorrow's race, not the Kentucky Derby. So, but, you know, he's going to be favored in the race. And I thought Win 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 ran a solid race in the Tampa Bay Derby. I was a little skeptical about him going two turns, but I thought he ran a good race that day. So to me, they're both solid, legitimate contenders in here. The other horse that kind of intrigues me is Some Like It Hot Brown. His form is just going to be all dirtied up because it's been all grass and synthetic, but I like the way he won. He's got a dirt pedigree. And his one dirt race, to me, you can throw out. It was an off-the-turf race at Saratoga. It was his debut on a sloppy sealed track, and he's obviously a better horse now. And, you know, the risk-reward here should be good because you get a better price because there's the chance that he's not a dirt horse. So that's the gamble that you take here. But I think he's a win candidate at, he's 10 on the morning line. I could see him being in the 8 range, but I think he's a win candidate. I don't know what to make of Signal Man. I didn't like him going into the Fountain of Youth because I just thought it was a race he was going to need, and he would move forward off of it, which I think he will. That said, I thought his race was dreadful. There was pace, and he just never really finished the race off. He's come back to work strongly, so I'm expecting a better performance from him. So I'm of mixed mind on him. He's the kind of horse that I would use in my sequential wagers just as a protection play because I think he's capable of a lot better. I just thought he'd run better in his first start off the layoff. But I, regardless, I think he's going to move forward because he just has that look to him.
Well, and we talked when we talked with Marty earlier, and Hammer gave some thoughts about the bluegrass. Jay, let's come to Santa Anita and talk about this unique day that we'll see the Big Cap and the Santa Anita Derby run on the same card. We don't like the reason that that's the case, but it's certainly kind of interesting and cool.
Right. I mean, so there's 6 in the race. There were going to be 5, and then Hollendorfer threw in more ice when he saw that there was going to be such a small field, maybe hoping just to pick up a small piece of the action. You know, from a pace standpoint, Instagram is the one to catch. You know, I'm skeptical that he's going to want a mile and an eighth. He's built like a mile-type horse. He's just got a sort of a blockier look to him. He's an extremely talented horse. I'm just skeptical that as these distances now increase, you know, he's yet to go two turns. He's yet to go past a one-turn mile, and I'm thinking that a two-turn mile and an eighth might not be ideal for him. Game winner, just he fires every time, even in defeat behind Omaha Beach. I thought he ran a solid race because I think very highly of Omaha Beach. And I thought it was a good race off the layoff for a horse who I have no qualms over him getting the distance. And then you've got Roadster, who came off of a long layoff and had throat surgery and certainly ran back to the promise that he had shown in his debut last summer at Del Mar. I mean, he was favored over Game Winner in the Del Mar Futurity, but it was after that when he needed throat surgery and he looked like the horse that they thought he was going to be when he came back, and he's trained well out of the race too. So it's a small field, but obviously horses of high quality. I don't know what to make of Novo Contesto, quite honestly, because I thought he had a slightly compromised trip in the allowance race behind Roadster. I thought it was a good race. I just didn't think he got the cleanest run that day. I wasn't crazy about his last work. It wasn't horrible, but it just wasn't. I just thought coming into the Santa Anita Derby, I just thought I'd see better. So I'm not sure that he's quite at this level yet, even though he did beat Omaha Beach earlier this year. I just think Omaha Beach has made far more progress. At least that's how it looks to me the day before the Santa Anita Derby. I'll reevaluate if Noel Contesto beats the Big Three tomorrow. But I like game winner in Roadster, and we'll see if Noel Contesto runs better than I think he will, and if Instagram likes the distance more than I think he will.
Well, Jay, we've seen this game before, and when you get races like this, you start alphabetically at the top of the alphabet, and usually that means Bob Baffert. And he's got, interestingly, going back to the points, game winner has 45, which, you know, when you get those points early and you're in these races, it really takes the heat off. It's not like Bob. Bob's not a guy that gives a horse a race. He's not that type. But game winner, once again, just the same as he came back last time, he doesn't have to win. He's got to perform good. This horse is so competitive, he's going to do things on his own. But he doesn't need to be, you know, hard driven to get there and you know, take any energy out that he could preserve for down the road. He's probably good enough just on his own to beat these, and that's the beauty of having those points. And so you have three other horses in here that have little Derby aspirations. Roadster, 0 points. Nolo Contesto, 0 points. Instagram, 10 points. Obviously, two of those three are going to be left out in the cold if they run, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. Roadster was the new Justify. Immediately after Justify retired last year, the buzz was going all over the place. The Roadster, and he gave the Roadster fans a little thrill. He won his debut like he was supposed to, and big thrill there. Then laid an egg, so to speak, a beat by Game Winner in the Futurity game. Some time off, took care of a few things. And he came back running the other day. So, you know, the Jets are going to be full speed for Roadster. So, I mean, I don't know what the price difference is going to be. I mean, game winner, what's he going to be, 3 to 5-ish, something like
that?
Yeah,
I think he's 4 to 5 on John's line.
Is
yeah,
he 4
I mean,
to 5?
He's going to be in that range, right.
He'll be that range. So I don't know what you're going to get on Roadster. Are you going to get 2 to 1, 5 to 2, 3 to 1 in there if you're looking for something? I agree with you about the other ones. I think it's a Bob Baffert double, any way you look at it. The Instagram is the obvious horse that we're all looking at, the unique way to approach the race, to giving the horse a break, and so he's going to be fresh for the remainder of these 3-year-old years. Distance wise, it's a problem. They probably did the right thing. Fitness-wise, going back there for that one-turn mile, which leads you again to doing something the first time, is going around two turns. The distance is a question. I think the horse is going in the right direction, but it'll be interesting. But once again, you gotta knock down the barn door at the Baffert Stable to get there, I think.
Well, we will come out the other side of these three preps, the big first Saturday in April, with a number of questions answered, obviously, Jay, and that'll leave us with the Arkansas Derby next week. We'll be at Hot Springs when we talk to you on Friday, but obviously we'll see you here tomorrow. Some final thoughts?
I just have two words for you regarding your trip next week.
Yes.
Pancake shop. Pancake shop. That's the only all I have for you.
Is that at the end of town?
No, right in the middle, right in the center, right across from the, just between the Arlington, just past the Arlington Hotel on the other side of the street. Pancake shop, a lot of fun. I like the cinnamon, the coffee cake actually over there. That's my
UBU.
Jay, thanks so much. We'll see you here tomorrow.
All right, guys. See you tomorrow.
Thanks, Jake.
DRF Privman, everybody, and look forward to seeing Jay. We'll take a timeout. 90 minutes in, 90 to come, and Nick Tamaro actually ended up having a flat tire, so it's going to turn out fine that we went a little long in this first half, so we'll talk to Nick at the end of the morning. We want to get a quick visit in with Dick Powell and some big doings at Sha Tin. Little Hong Kong Jockey Club respite. We'll also get Dick's thoughts about how Dubai turned out. And then we've got Scully and DeRosa, Dave Grenig, and then, as I said, Dick Tamaro late in the show. Stay with us. Second half. Sun is basking down. It's absolutely a glorious morning. And let's make it a glorious Friday, Saturday, Sunday right here at the Great Race Place. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.